You know what's funny is that it's actually more sad than funny, Kai. You know, I keep hearing on the media about Goldilocks and soft landing, and in fact, there was one Fed official, ex-Fed official, who said that, you know, a soft landing's in the bag, you know, yippee-yay. The fact is that we've had 14 straight months of a shrinking manufacturing sector in this country. The goods producing, high-paying jobs in this country, the manufacturing sector, is in a recession for over a year. Now, how in God's good name could that be Goldilocks?
Welcome back to Soar Financially, the channel where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of the Soar Financial Group. And since we're recording this on January 4th, Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Health and wealth to you in 2024, and may you make some smart investment decisions this year. You already started with the first proper step, getting educated by watching this interview. Thanks so much for joining us. If you haven't done so, hit that subscribe button because we will be bringing you a lot of educated content from fantastic guests and experts this year. And check out our channel as well. We've already uploaded a flurry of fantastic conversations. Make sure to check them out as well and engage with us. Now, before I switch over to my guests, again, quick reminder, hit that subscribe button. We truly appreciate it. About 80 to 85% of you watching are not subscribed. Let's change that. Let's spread the word. Let's get investors educated because it's going to be a bumpy 2024, in my prediction. Let's see what our guest has to say about that. It is Michael Pento of Pento Portfolio Strategies. Michael, Happy New Year. Welcome back on the channel. It's good to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Kai, and blessings to you and yours for a wonderful 2024.
Oh, it's gonna be a fun one. It is for sure. Thank you so much for that. And Michael, let's jump right in. We need to discuss the bit of the change of the year, 2023. We had a massive Santa Claus rally. The markets pretty much ended up at all-time highs, but the rally's come to a screeching halt. Let's start there with a discussion, Michael. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my visceral response is I thought that 2023 would be a challenging year, both economically and market-wise. So let's see. Basically, the answer is I was wrong. I got it wrong, but let's just put two asterisks on that fact. Number one is I predicted that we would be in a recession in 2023. That did not happen. But most importantly, I didn't invest that way. This was a prediction I made in 2022, by the way. So I'm just going back. Let's do a year review, just to introspective, to get just to ask yourself to be honest with yourself. Because you can't, you're not putting on a show here. You're trying to be honest with people, right? So why didn't we get a recession in 2023? Well, recall back in March, if you reckon all the way back to March of 2023, the entire regional banking system was melting down. And that would have caused a recession, if not a depression in this country, if not in many parts of the developed world as well. So what Powell did was he launched the Bank Term Funding Program, among other things, which printed $400 billion in 2 weeks and guaranteed the assets of all of mortgage-backed securities, agency debt, and treasuries of all the banks in the United States. That served to hold the recession in abeyance. Now, here's the most important question. Did you invest for a recession the entire year? That's the question. I mean, was I short the market the entire year of 2023? The answer is no, I was not. So we actually ended up squeaking a little bit of a positive return in 2023. So the most important question is, how did you invest? Did your model change in a reaction to the Fed's massive manipulation of the money supply once again? Well, the answer is yes, it did change. Now, the market, by the way, if you look at the equal weight S&P 500 index, my call was that the stock market wouldn't do much in 2023, which ended up being wrong. But all the way till November 10th of 2023, the equal weight S&P 500 was unchanged for the year. So Mr. Pinto, you were wrong about the recession, but you didn't invest that way the whole year. And you were wrong about the direction of equities, but you were right for 10 and a half months. You were correct. So we've had a mea culpa here. But here's the most important thing, Kai. The underlying problems that are evident and have manifested in the economy and markets haven't gone away. They've been exacerbated. And we still have that piper to pay.
Recession. I think a lot of people got the forecast wrong. I expected it as well, to be honest. I didn't go out there because I don't get interviewed. I'm usually the host, but everybody expected it. Everybody called the Godot recession the most forecasted recession in history, and it hasn't shown up yet. Right now, forecast is maybe April, May in 2024. Depends on the outlet or the guest you listen to. But I think I want to dive a little deeper just on the reason for the delay in the recession. So we can understand like sort of the lag effect. Like why has the lag effect taken? So why is the lag effect so laggy? Right. I think we need to sort of highlight that. You mentioned the bank term funding program, $400 billion thrown at the market there.
In two weeks, exactly. Now 130. By the way, Kai, I hate to interrupt you. It's now $133 billion of bank assets that sit on the bank's balance sheet. Now these assets, just to let you know what happened. What is the bank term funding program? People will say, well, why did you highlight that, Mr. Penta? So the banks were going out of business. In March of 2023, it was four banks that went under, and it was metastasizing rapidly. Even Charles Schwab was in danger because what they did, they were in danger of buying a lot of long-term treasuries, which were yielding, sub 1%, but eventually ended up yielding over, 5%. Well, 4 to 5%, depending on the duration. Well, when that's the case, guess what? The prices plunged. So on a mark-to-market basis, these balance sheets were insolvent. So what the Fed did was to say to all these banks, give me your agency debt, give me your treasuries. I even though they're massively underwater, I will, they're 60, 70 cents on the dollar. I will give you 100 cents of the dollar in Fed credit, and I'll hold those assets for you for 1 year. That year ends March of 2024. So the bank term funding program is supposed to end at the end of the first quarter of next year. Let's see what Powell does. That's why, it's hard to make these predictions and say what's exactly going to happen at a specific time going out months or a year in the future. You can identify the issues and say that there's a problem there and then monitor it closely and then react to what the decision's made. But you can't sit here and dogmatically speak about exactly what's going to happen. Now, also what's going to happen around the March timeframe is the reverse repo facility runs dry. And runs dry means it's going to have about $200-$300 billion left in it. And it's at that time that all of the easy liquidity that is supplying these massive issuances of treasuries, both for rollovers and deficits, it's about $7 trillion in rollovers and deficits that have to be financed in 2024. The easy money for that has been in the reverse repo facility. It was $2.5 trillion. It's now, I believe it's now $700 or $800 billion. That's all that's left in the reverse repo facility. When that runs dry in March, at the same time, concurrently, the bank term funding program is supposed to expire. Those two things happen, then you'll see an air pocket of epic proportions hit the stock market and the economy. But let's see.
Absolutely. No, it's a lot of liquidity that's required. And it seems like the Fed is already having problems, the Treasury's having issues selling their bonds. Like we're hearing, it's not widely publicized for some reason. It's tough to find good data on that as well. At the bond auctions that from the end of the year, I hear it wasn't as smooth sailing as in the past. Do you have any opinion on the bond sales and how that sort of fit together? Because we'll need to sell more to sort of finance that.
Yeah, well, the liquidity in the bond market is already running dry. We have about 3 months left of that easy liquidity. And they're already trading like a pink sheet, small cap pink sheet stock, with no, you know, with very low outstanding shares. So, you know, when you see moves in the treasury complex at 10, 15, 20 basis points in a day, you know that there's very, a very much lack of liquidity there. And that's going to be exponentially exacerbated come the end of Q1 of this year.
I want to circle back to recession before we go, jump down the bond rabbit hole here, or the bond market rabbit hole. Recession, like, would you agree or disagree that we're already in a recession to a degree?
No, I mean, the way the NBER calculates a recession, it's two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Q3 was 5%.
No, okay. So, no, okay. So you go by the official and the proper definition of recession.
I'm just telling you, I don't go by the official. I'm saying what the official numbers say is that we're not in a recession right now.
No.
But more importantly, if you want to look at 60% of Americans don't have $1,000 in the bank, the middle class is being eviscerated. Inflation has destroyed the purchasing power of that entire cohort. They're in a depression. So it depends on who you're talking to. People like me think, hey, you know, happy days are here again. We own houses and huge portfolios, and the market was doing well. So, you know, we're okay. We're doing fine. But the, you know, most American consumers are in a depression right now. So you asked me about the official numbers. I'm saying to you what they are. I don't believe that that's ubiquitous. It's not, we're not a monolithic nation. We have, like I said, we eviscerated the middle class. So most of Americans are hurting and hurting badly.
Absolutely. Now, it's depending on the sector as well, because I think yesterday or the day before yesterday, I opened up the Reuters Macro Matters page. And out of the seven headlines, five of them were talking about manufacturing being under pressure globally, being Canada, India, the U.S. PMIs are coming in lower everywhere. So,
you know what's funny is that it's actually more sad than funny, Kai. You know, I keep hearing on the media about Goldilocks and soft landing. And in fact, there was one Fed official, ex-Fed official, who said that, you know, soft landing's in the bag, you know, yippee-yi-yay. The fact is that we've had 14 straight months of a shrinking manufacturing sector in this country. The goods producing, high-paying jobs in this country, the manufacturing sector, is in a recession for over a year. Now, how in God's good name could that be Goldilocks?
Absolutely. It brings me so many different thoughts about that, like a theory as well. I interviewed Ed Yardeni the other day, and he's quite optimistic on the economy and the markets.
Well, wait, Kai, when is he? Here's the thing. I hate to interrupt you.
No worries.
Which I often do, so please forgive me. I don't really pay attention to perma anybody's. So if you're a perma bull or a perma bear, you have no credibility with me. So if I'm not saying it is, but if Ed Yardeni was bullish in 2008, and if he was bullish in 2022, or if he's always bullish, or if anybody's always bullish, they have no credibility with me. And there are many people who are always bullish. There are some who are always bearish too. You shouldn't listen to either one of those people. I have a 20-point model, an inflation, deflation, economic cycle model that I follow, that I created, and I follow it to allow me to know when I need to get out of harm's way, own the four horsemen of the economic apocalypse, and try to protect and profit during a recession, because that's when the market drops 30, 50, 80%. I think we could be heading into a recession next year. I thought we were going to be in one in 2022, which I got correct. By the way, I got that, I got that year correctly predicted. I thought it would be a continuation in 2023. It didn't happen because of what we just talked about, the Bank Term Fund Day program and the Vanguard. However, I think 2024 will be the continuation of that recession that began in the bear market that began in 22. And can I just tell you a few reasons why, if you don't mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because here's some of the indicators I look at in my model that say, yes, a recession is not here now, but it's still on the menu. It's still in the cards. We've had the longest and steepest inversion of the yield curve, the inversion of the 2-year and 10-year note yield spread in 43 years. And that continues to say that we're not only going to have a recession, it's going to be a sharp recession. The index of leading economic indicators says we're heading for a recession. So does the National Federation of Independent Business Survey. Delinquencies and bankruptcies on the personal and corporate level are surging, and that has continued to pressure consumption, which is 70% of GDP. The refinancing of consumer and business debt at much higher interest rates continues to occur inexorably. Banks are cutting the lending for commercial and industrial loans. And the Fed continues to burn base money supply at the stated rate of about $95 billion per month. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little more. That's offsetting what's going on in the reverse repo facility, or the reverse repo facility drain is offsetting QT. But QT is going to bite and bite hard starting in April when that RRP facility runs dry. So, you could also talk about deficits at $2 trillion. You could add in $34 trillion national debt, the $7 trillion of the bond market debt that has to be refinanced, Treasury and MBS. So, we have a lot of problems in this country, none of which have been resolved. And we haven't even talked about the political disaster heading for this election, where you have the Republican front runner being banned from ballots in two states already. And I'm sure there's many more blue states lining up behind him. Listen, I am not a Republican and I'm not a Democrat. I'm a libertarian. But this kind of behavior resembles a banana republic. That is what is going on in this country when you arrest and do harm to former leaders. Say that the people no longer have a choice, and they're doing this in the name of preserving democracy, taking someone off the ballot. So, when you have a central bank that monetizes trillions of dollars in debt, when you have debt to GDP that's 130%, 135% and rising, deficits that are $2 trillion per annum. This is a banana republic, unfortunately, and it gives me no pleasure to say that, but that's the direction we're headed in.
Absolutely. But based on your statements here, I think you're agreeing with Deutsche Bank here that we're in a policy-led boom and bust cycle that is inevitably leading to a hard landing. And the question is now, how would you define that hard landing scenario there, Michael?
There's no doubt we're going to have, in my opinion, we're going to have a very hard landing. I am not backing down from that one iota. So a hard landing is a recession where you see unemployment rate rise towards 10%. It's when the stock market gives up between 30 and 50% of its value, and you see GDP shrink about by 4 or 5%. That's something I think is unavoidable. And I'll tell you why I think it's unavoidable, because I often have these mental experiments that I run through and I backtest them rigorously using data. It isn't a guarantee, Kai, that, let me backtrack a second. In the normal course of action, the Fed will lower interest rates, monetize debt, and then reduce the cost of money, and thus preserving, or at least laying the groundwork to ameliorate and then reverse the a recession. You follow that, correct? That's the normal playbook. Since 1987, that has been the playbook, and it's worked well. However, and this is something that's a very salient, important point that I want you and your listeners to understand. If the Fed were to now, at this point, retreat to ZERP and QE to ameliorate a banking crisis, the lack of liquidity for bonds, a collapse in the stock market, the rising unemployment rate, they would be doing so with the sting of record high inflation still very saliently in the minds of consumers and businesses and investors. And that means that the confidence in the bond market and the confidence in the US dollar could be obliterated. It would take a severe hit. And in that case, instead of seeing long-term interest rates fall, as they always have done since 1987, as the Fed lowers interest rates, you might see long-term interest rates rise. So you'll have a recession concomitant with rising borrowing costs instead of the remedial factors of lower interest rates. And that is a prescription for a disaster in the stock market.
Michael, we spoke last time at the end of August, right after the Jackson Hole meeting, and you had some interesting comments there to share. So I want to follow up with you now on the Fed action and Fed policies here. And I mentioned it in other interviews as well, but I was surprised how clear Powell was about the dovishness of the Fed for this year and mentioning three rate cuts. I was really surprised how clear he was in his statements. The market took it and it's like, okay, if he says three, it's probably going to be six or seven. But I'm curious, what you think the Fed is going to do this year? And do you believe in three? It seems like, but just based on some jobless numbers, job numbers we got today, actually, from ADP, that the Fed might push back rate cuts to a little later in the year. The Bank of America predicts maybe June.
Yeah, so a month before this last meeting, you know, Mr. Powell said, we're not even thinking about rate cuts. And then, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later, he says, not only are we thinking about it, but we actually put three in our dot plot. Is he a liar? Is he feckless? Is he schizophrenic? How could you possibly go from not thinking about it to having three in the dot plot? That doesn't make any cognitive sense to me whatsoever. I believe though three is probably likely. I don't know if it starts in March or maybe towards the summertime. I'm not sure. Of course, it's just a guess based on the data that I see very weak economic data. And I want to just point out something you just said about the labor statistics here. So we're going to get an unemployment rate on Friday. I don't have that number. I don't have the non-farm payroll because this interview is being recorded on Thursday. But the initial job claims were better. But I want to just say that Challenger Gray and Christmas does excellent work. And while layoffs are down, they're way up for the year 2023 over 2022. And most importantly, hiring plans. This is according to Challenger Gray and Christmas, not Michael Pinto. Hiring plans from corporations are the lowest level since data began being collected by them in 2009. So when you talk about non-farm payroll reports, I mean, if you don't lay off anybody, but you don't hire anybody, guess what? It's zero. So I would be cautious about thinking that this non-farm payroll report is going to be, overly exuberant. But you know what? One of the hardest things to do as an economist and as a market strategist is to guess the donkey dung that comes out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, because they just have this birth death model that just makes up, hires. I mean, I'm not saying they're nefarious in nature. I'm just saying that it's wildly inaccurate. If you look at surveys, like we just had the Institute of Supply Management's manufacturing survey come out, and for 14 months in a row, as I said, it's a negative. And their hiring is negative. So that's a smaller part of the economy. We'll get the services sector on actually after the unemployment rate is announced. But every private source you can see, even ADP came out today as 160,000. That's below the estimate for non-farm payroll. So the labor market, I, from my observations, is weakening. It's just not falling apart yet. It's one of the most prominent features I look at in my model, though.
Yeah. A lot of labor hoarding going on as well here, because people, we just talked about it earlier before hitting the record button, there are more jobs than job seekers. So if you want to, you can't let anybody go because you'll never find them again, and you can't rehire. So people are holding on longer maybe, or making those necessary cuts maybe later than they should probably.
Correct.
Yeah. I promised our audience that we'd probably get back to the bond discussion here real quick, and I do want to talk about it because we've seen a massive drop in bond yields, meaning a bit of a rally in the bond market. But that's reversing. And the first time in, I don't know, I forgot the number, maybe 20 years, the bond market and the stock market sold off for the first trading day of the year as well, telling us something. And the question is, Michael, what is it telling us? And what is the bounce back in bond yields telling you right now as well?
Well, I think I already touched on this. I mean, it's telling me that the confidence in the U.S. dollar and in treasuries is fracturing. It's on very shaky ground. And there's good reason for that. I mean, this is the world's reserve currency, and currency reserves are parked in dollars, which are used in the holding of treasury bonds. That's where currency reserves are held. And if you don't have any faith in the government, and you can talk about dollar hegemony, you can talk about sanctions against countries that don't like us anymore, that are huge holders of our debt. It's a process of gradual decline in this confidence. And if you start printing money again after you've already had 9% official inflation, CPI inflation, and in reality 17 to 20%, the way I measure it and many other shadow statistics measure inflation, you're gonna break the confidence in the dollar and in the bond market. And that means that you're not gonna have the usual Pavlovian response of investors just blindly buying bonds at the first hint of a recession. I mean, they may for a very truncated period of time, they might do that. But on the other end of that, you know, we have $2 trillion deficits in peacetime, in prosperity. You know, what happens if we have, China annexes Taiwan, the war in the Middle East spreads, Kim Jong-un threatened to, wipe America off the map a couple of days ago. I mean, we could have war and we could have a recession. That's when, deficits triple in a recession. So we could have a $6 trillion deficit. And who the hell is going to buy it? I mean, the Fed is the only person who could buy all this debt. And that's highly inflationary on top of the inflation we just are supposedly almost over. Although if you're a first time home buyer, you might not agree with that.
US dollar is another big topic as well. But last question on bond yields. Where do you see them headed? Or where do you see 2024 end in terms of bond yields? It's going to be quite volatile, in my opinion. But where do you see yields headed later this year?
Yields aren't homogenous. They're not, it's not a monolithic thing. So I look at short-term rates and long-term rates across the yield curve. I think that, both short and long-term rates will fall. So bond yields will rally. Much more on the short end of the yield curve, because the Fed controls the money markets. They don't control the long end. The long end is much more interested in inflation. And as I said, I think that question of our ability to finance our debt in an environment of inflation is going to be challenged, to say the least. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the long end. Let's just talk about the benchmark 10-year note yield stay around 4% for a while, then drop as the recession, maybe to 3.5 range, but then shoot back up to 5%. But I think the short-term interest rates might fall to around between 2 to 2.5. And right now they're 4.5, they're around that level. So that's your most, if you want to be a bond investor, most of your investment should be on the short end, which means 1 to 3 years.
Yeah. Back in August, you were 60% in short-term builds, so in the short ones. So are you still positioned like that, or has that changed?
I am 70% in,
it's increased.
70% in short. Now back then, I was in T-bills mostly, but I've now moved to 1 to 3 years. Because I do want to catch some of that convexity that you get in duration as the Fed cuts rates.
Okay, gotcha.
You won't get that in T-bills.
You briefly touched on the U.S. dollar. I just want to follow up with you on it as well, the development of the U.S. dollar. I think one of the banks mentioned that, well, the U.S. doesn't have it, or the U.S. dollar doesn't really have a clear challenger in 2024. So it's the only market where you can actually park some money or some liquidity. So it should remain at the current level, at least. They don't expect a massive rally or a massive sell-off in the U.S. dollar. Is that something you agree with, or do you have a different opinion on the U.S. dollar?
I was long the U.S. dollar for the past 2 years, very good trade for me and my investors. We sold all half of it about 8 months ago, hold me to that. But then we sold the other half a couple of weeks ago. They were completely out of the US dollar. I think the dollar could fall here as the recession manifests, then catch a huge bid, a safety bid, for a while, as that, you know, whenever you have a global liquidity scare, people just reflexively go into the dollar, into treasuries. But as I said, I don't think that lasts long. So a short move into the dollar, into treasuries, and then as the Fed is able to reliquify the system, then I think that'd be the end of US dollar dominance and hegemony and reserve currency status, maybe even forever, unfortunately. It's a huge privilege that we've abused too long.
Absolutely. No, that's unfortunately true words. And when you talk about the US dollar, we have to talk about commodities as well, because you mm-hmm. talk about abolishment as the US dollar is a reserve currency. There are other currencies emerging worldwide. Some of them are talking about backing their currency with gold. Let's talk about the precious metal. How do you see it developing moving forward as well? We're trading around all-time high levels, but excitement is still palpable. It's like it's barely there. There's barely any excitement around the precious metal.
You know, Kai, gold just hit an all-time high recently, and it did so in an environment of a Fed funds rate at, you know, 5.25 to 5.5, and in an environment where the pervasive malarkey out there is that we're in Goldilocks. I mean, you imagine how high gold is going to go when reality actually hits and you see a recession in the data. I think the dollar will tumble. And I think gold, which is an alternative currency. It's not a commodity. So commodities aren't monolithic either. You have base metals, you have energy, and then you have gold. Gold is money. A much lower volatility dynamics to it than oil or uranium or any other commodity. So I think oil and base metals are a no touch right now. I wouldn't touch the equities underwriting them either. But I am very much long gold because I think we are on the precipice of some really bad economic data. In the first two quarters of 2024, you'll start to see that manifest. And if we're hitting all-time highs or flirting with all-time highs now, just imagine how high it could go. You know, I also do this thought, like I said, I do thought experiments. And I know it's not the same, but a unit of Bitcoin, if a unit of Bitcoin, which is basically, you know, electronic numbers and letters in the private key on a hard drive, could be $60,000 a unit. why can't an ounce of gold be $3,000 an ounce? I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah. How are you playing gold right now? Like, what's your preferred instrument?
So I have there's three ways to play gold. There's actual ownership of gold, which is the physical ownership of the gold. In other words, I can get access to my gold without anybody else allowed. There's no gateways. There's no walls up. There's just me and my gold. So that's one way. That's the only real way to own gold, not in a bank stored and not in an ETF, not in any other way. Now, the other way I own gold is through ETFs. Now, I call that liquid paper gold, because you don't really own the gold, but you could still profit in its increase. So you can buy any of the, you know, IAU or AAU. You can buy in GLD. Those are the ETFs that supposedly own gold, which gives you access. They go up in value, they go up and down, and you can make money. So that's an indisputable fact. And the other way is a leveraged way to own gold is to buy the miners. So I currently have about 3% in gold miners, and I currently have about 7 to 8% in physical, I call it not physical, liquid paper gold, and 5% in physical gold, which is I recommend, which means this is the only real, I mean, you own gold because you don't touch, you don't trust the banking system, you don't trust the currency, you don't trust the US dollar, you don't trust financial institutions. So you have to own the gold. Otherwise, I mean, I always like make this I always say, like, imagine calling Hong Kong up. There's still, you know, there's vaults in Hong Kong. Hey, can I have my gold? Wait, what are you saying? China's just to annex Taiwan and they're coming for, you know, Hong Kong next. So you might not get it. So if you want to own gold, own it in your own physical possession. That's the only real way to own it. And then if you want to have paper exposure to it, you can own the ETFs or the miners.
Okay. Last question I need to follow up with you there in regard to the miners. Can we break that down just a tad more? Like, I don't want names. You don't have to share names. That's fine. But are you looking at the large cap companies, just the majors, or how far downstream are you going? Are you looking at royalty companies at all?
We own the GDX.
Okay.
So I'm not at all adept. First of all, you know, gold. I mean, if you want to shorten your life, buy, get exposure to a couple of gold miners. It's really a lottery ticket. I've seen them go to zero, and I've seen them explode in value. But the reason why I'm not into juniors is because juniors are like small caps, and I don't like small caps right now, because anything that any company has to access the credit markets during distress is going to be destroyed. And gold miners are stocks. So if I'm right about a recession and if I'm right about a collapse in the stock market, guess what's going to get killed? Gold miners. So you have to be agile. I mean, I'm here every day trading I don't trade every day, but I'm monitoring the model every day, and I'm trying to preserve my principal as much as possible and participate in bull markets when I can as safely as possible. And that means you have to actively manage your positions. So I own gold stocks now. They'll do really well as the economy starts to, you know, fall into recession. They'll do terribly if we have a stock market crash. And then on the other end of that, they'll do spectacularly once the Fed is successful in reliquifying the financial system, because they're going to have stagflation as far as you can see, in my opinion. The Fed is going to be buying bonds, pushing up prices, pushing down on yields, which means real interest rates will be falling as inflation rises. And that's when you have to own maximum exposure to precious metals.
Absolutely. No, it's as Rick Rule said, know if you're an investor or a speculator, right? So if you're buying junior mining stocks, you're just a speculator. You're not investing. That's not a long-term plan strategy. So
if you do, nothing wrong with buying a lottery ticket. I don't buy them, but I mean, many people
exactly.
do. But understand, you own a lottery ticket, and you don't put, you know, 10% of your discretionary capital in a lottery ticket. That would be ridiculous.
Exactly. Fantastic. Michael, really, really enjoyed the conversation. I think we covered a wide range of topics here. I think everybody got a good idea where things are headed in 2024. Where can we find more of your work? How can we follow you, Michael?
So the website is pentoport.com, and there you'll find a 5-week free trial of the midweek reality check, which I put a lot of my, you know, thoughts and data that you might not see on the mainstream financial media, because they just don't want you to know. Remember that it's just an outlet for them to sell advertising to people who profit from a bull market. You know, they sell stocks and bonds. So you have to understand that. So it's a 5-week free trial. If you like what you see, it's $50 a year. If you have $100,000 to invest and you're a U.S. citizen, I will directly manage your portfolio with the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model, which, as I said, it's a great way to protect your money. I don't like losses. You know, what's the one rule that Warren Buffett always said? You know, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is refer to rule number one. So I don't like losing money. Keep your losses very small, but then take appropriate risks to try to keep a real return, you know, an after tax, after inflation return on your investments, and have a model, a robust model, which I have done and which I have created, that'll let you know when it's time to own the four horsemen, which is cash, bonds, US dollar for a while, and when to short the market, because the market has at 170% of GDP. I didn't even touch on this, Kai. This total market cap of equities is 170% of GDP. That is the most expensive stock market in history prior to 2020. If you look at price to sales, the most expensive stock market prior to 2020. If you look at something called the risk premiums, which tells you how much stocks are earning, the earnings yield of stocks, PE, inverse of the PE, in relationship to bonds, it's zero. You're getting zero compensation for owning stocks over bonds at this moment. So you have a very expensive stock market. Be extremely cautious, and we'll take good care of you over here if you decide to give us a chance.
Fantastic. Awesome. Michael, really appreciative of your time. Truly appreciate it. Thank you so much. All the best in 2024. Of course, we'll catch up before the year is over again. Usually like to check in every 3 to 6 months. So looking forward to catching up with you then. Perhaps running to you at one of the conferences here as well. So really looking forward to that. Thank you so much for your time. And to everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you tremendously enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, hit that subscribe button down below. I keep moving it on YouTube. It's just somewhere down below here. Really appreciate it. Leave a comment, leave a like. How are you seeing the situation develop? How are you positioned to profit? Or maybe you're shorting. Personally, I'm a long and gone kind of investor. But let us know. We want to hear from you. And of course, it helps us with the algorithm if you share with your like-minded investor friends as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with lots more.